Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt. Today, we're in the Grey Lodge. Today, things are heating up. I said it the last couple times, and I mean it. We're diving deep into the UFO occult side of Twin Peaks. That's right. In Season 2, Episode 13, titled Checkmate, we're going to hear some major revelations, okay? And we're going to take it nice and slow, baby. Nice and slow. We're going to hear Major Briggs. He came back. He went on his hero's journey, and he's back with the bones. He's going to tell us about Project Blue Book. A major clue in Twin Peaks. We're going to see symbolism of the occult tarot hierophant card. That's right. Major Briggs is the Pope. The Pope of the occult. And before the episode's over, we're going to get another major revelation. We're going to confirm this idea that Laura Palmer kickstarted some cosmological battle between good and evil. All right? Stick with me, folks. It's going to be Bangerville, all right? And we're going to start out, I'm going to play you a clip from the beginning of the show, because the show starts out banging hard as hell. And this clip here, I mean, this could be the entire show today, folks. We could unpack the first 4 minutes of Twin Peaks. And for those listening and not seeing the clip, what it starts out in outer space. You're gonna hear a voice whispering Cooper, and there's this flying symbol of three triangles connected together, and there's a vision of Major Briggs speaking from a throne in the woods. And he's talking about how a giant owl is out there in the woods and his memories are immune from regression. Because in reality, he's at the police station and he's talking to Dr. Hayward and Cooper and Truman and such. And they're going to see that he's got a scar behind his ear of those three triangles. All right. And listen to what Briggs says about Project Blue Book and how all these things are connected. And he starts to reveal the truth. And we're going to come back and unpack this. So it's going to be a few minutes long. Take a listen.
I remember stepping from the flames, a vague shape in the dark, then nothing, till I found myself standing by the cold remains of our campfire 2 days later.
Major, there are some new techniques that might help us break through your amnesia.
My memories are immune from regression. I can feel them. They're palpable, the smells and sensation. Everything is known to me and somehow beyond my reach.
Do you remember anything else?
Very little, save for one disturbing image of giant owl.
A giant owl. How big?
Enough to cloud my mind and memory.
Three triangular scars behind the right ear in perfect proportion.
Major Briggs, exactly what does your work involve?
That information's as I've repeated endlessly to myself. Classified. Oh, the keeping of secrets seems less meaningful to me now. Perhaps there are sources of information that are so important as to transcend the human need to conspire. Information of such weight that it pertains not. Oh, God. Is this meant for the soul? My soul?
Major, perhaps you'd better start back at the beginning.
Are you familiar with Project Blue Book?
Yes, sir, I am. The Air Force investigation into the phenomena of unidentified flying objects.
Officially disbanded in 1969. But there are those of us who continue in an unofficial capacity, examining the heavens as before. In the case of Twin Peaks, the earth below. We are searching for a place called the White Lodge.
Major Briggs?
I've been expecting you.
Hold on just a minute, fellows.
Colonel Riley's orders.
I don't care what orders you got. This is my station, and Major Briggs happens to be a friend of
mine. Afraid we will have to continue this discussion at a later date.
Are you sure you want to go with him?
Yeah. Bye.
There's a lot to unpack, so let's go. So in Briggs' mind, he is in a chair in the woods, and we know the Ghostwood National Forest has a prominent role in this Twin Peaks storyline. But in reality, he's actually at the sheriff's station. He's residing in two places at one time, a state of superposition in quantum physics. And it seems like his consciousness is maybe jumping around a bit since he was abducted. Back in, what was it, season 2, episode 10, I think he got abducted. Remember that? At the end of the episode, him and Truman, or him and Cooper were at the campsite, and Cooper gets that vision, and boom, Briggs is gone. Now, Briggs, he's in this throne in the woods, is in one of his realms of consciousness, and you'll notice the chair he's sitting in, he appears to be the Hierophant tarot deck card, which, not so ironically, is the card used in the, I don't know if it's unofficial, but there's a Twin Peaks tarot deck that somebody built up. I'd love to get my hands on one of them. It was created many years later, and they actually use that imagery. And the Hierophant, the purpose of that card is used to predict the future, and the Hierophant is regarded as the Pope card. Because the Hierophant brings congregants into the presence of that which is holy. And you'll notice the Hierophant has two fingers pointed up and two fingers pointed down, right? Just like the Baphomet, right? The goat with the bobs. And what that represents is, of course, the Hermetic axiom, as above, so below. The two worlds commingling, just like Briggs is experiencing at this very moment, by the way. It's said that the Hierophant actually resides in three realms. There's the conscious, the subconscious, and the superconscious. And I don't know if that's related to, I think it was Freud that has the idea of the id, the ego, and the superego, or that was Carl Jung, three aspects of the mind. But the Hierophant attributes symbols as relevant to structure. And the Hierophant values institutions, the Hierophant values learning, and the Hierophant adheres to doctrines and deep thought, rational debate, and passing down wisdom, which is all the attributes of Major Briggs, right? If you go to, so I've got this book, the Library of Esoterica's book called Tarot. It's like an encyclopedia book. And it claims that Eliphas Lévi's book from 1856, The Doctrine and Ritual of Transcendental Magic, which had a couple translations, the PDF version that I have didn't say this, so that's why I'm referring to them. Maybe they're looking at the original French version, I don't know. But Lévi describes the Hierophant as follows. The Grand Hierophant, seated between the two pillars of Hermes and of Solomon, makes the sign of esotericism and leans upon a cross with three crossbars of triangular form. Now, isn't that interesting? Because we see this triangle symbol for the first time in Twin Peaks. It's behind the ear of Briggs, and we saw it flying through space. And if you read The Secret History of Twin Peaks, you'll find out that, which we're going to cover, the log lady, I believe, has it on her because she was abducted as a child as well or something like that, right? We'll cover that when we get there, okay? And the closest tarot depiction that I could see of these triangles, which isn't even the same symbol, but in the year 2000, there's a Japanese Animo tarot deck that has three vertical triangles on the Hierophant card. So it seems to be there's several ideas pointing to this idea of the three triangles and the Hierophant, which is Briggs. How does it all fit together? Not quite sure yet. But Major Briggs does have this scarring behind his ear, which you hear a lot of people that go through abductions, they come back with, you know, microchips implanted in them and scars and things like that. He can't share the details, the specifics with Cooper and Truman about what he does out there in the woods for the Air Force because it's classified, but he's starting to think the information is so important that maybe he should reveal it. Then he gets a little bit hung up on the idea of worrying about his soul, and that's when the SPs come to take him out of there, okay? Now, let's see here. I should note that later on, I'm not sure which episode, but Cooper draws three triangles, and all three of them are pointed vertically. They're not the same symbol. Like, Briggs' scar has three, you know, I don't know, equilateral triangles, and the apexes of each are touching, you know? Three tips touching. But the upright triangle represents masculinity or fire, which, you know, maybe that's where the fire walk with me comes from. I don't know. That's why Twin Peaks drive you mad, you know? But let's talk about Project Blue Book a little bit, because Briggs asked Cooper if he's familiar with it. And of course Cooper's familiar. Which you thought it was. Of course he knows that. Briggs says it was disbanded in 1969, or maybe Cooper said that. But Briggs says that some of them have continued the study. And he says they're actually searching for this place called the White Lodge on Earth. And that's when the security forces show up, so we don't get to hear the whole story, right? And what's interesting is that they're searching for the White Lodge on Earth. What's interesting is that Briggs says they've continued the Project Blue Book study in secrecy. Well, doesn't that fit with the theories of everything we know since all the major revelations about ATIP and Arrow and all these other programs that have been running off of black budgets from the government to study the phenomenon? Seems like maybe this was a little too real. Either way, Cooper, he's got this Polaroid of the ear tattoo there, and he looks up at the sprinkler system. And what I think he's looking at is how the sprinklers, he's reminded of the sprinklers forcing Bob to stop taking possession of Leland Palmer. Because the water is the opposing polarity force to the fire. And the triangle symbol traditionally, vertically, is shown as fire. You know? Are those things all connected? I'm not sure. I'm not really sure yet. We're still trying to unpack what the idea of fire is in the world of Twin Peaks. There's lots of different ideas. But to stick to the Project Blue Book idea, let's talk about that a little bit. This was a program to study UFOs by the U.S. Air Force from 1952 to 69. And of course, there's all these theories that it merely just changed names. It was all just a smoke and mirrors debunk program for the masses so they can keep, you know, watching sports ball or whatever it is they do. Not to worry about these higher forces going on, right? You got to keep people in the hamster wheel of capitalism while they worry about the big picture stuff. Now, there were two predecessor programs. You had Project Sign from 1947 and then Project Grudge from 1948. And so there's a continuous line basically from 1947 to 1969 and arguably past that. So again, it's interesting that 1947 is the year that the U.S. government decides to start investigating UFOs and the phenomenon, right after Roswell, that supposedly never happened, right after Jack Parsons and Aleister Crowley were doing all their channeling of aliens and such with like the Babylon working. So it is interesting that you see these things happening, but the officially Project Blue Book was shut down because they said, oh, well, these UFOs, they were not actually unidentified and they're not a threat. So let's just shut it down. And if you go to the actual Air Force fact sheet webpage, they'll tell you that there was over 12,000 sightings and 701 of them remain unidentified. You know, I don't know, what is that, like 0.5%? But that's still 701, right? It's kind of a big deal. But the lineage is what I'm focused on, right? Because Project Sign was the first, and it was started after General Nathan Twining requested it. And if you read The Secret History of Twin Peaks by Mark Frost, it notes that General Twining was at the scene of the Roswell crash in 1947, arguing that Project Sign, endorsed by General Twining, was to start investigating this UFO thing because they actually saw a crash happen. They said, what the heck is going on? Now, is this true? Was General Twining, who was a real person, was he really there at Roswell? I don't know. Officially, from what I could tell, it seems like he was not. But, you know, his U.S. Air Force bio says he was the commander of the 20th Air Force in the Pacific when his unit dropped the first atomic bomb on Hiroshima. And as you'll find out in this Twin Peaks world, that's relevant. But you don't know that yet, right? You don't know that. We could ascertain as much because we keep seeing references to the 1940s. What was going on in the 1940s? All kinds of stuff, that's what. In 1945, it says that he was at the Continental Air Force headquarters in Washington, D.C. for a couple of months before getting stationed at Wright-Patterson in Ohio. And he was actually at Wright-Patterson during the Roswell crash until October of 47 when he became the commanding general of the Alaskan Department. But Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is a hub of UFO activity. It was home for that Project Sign. It's a lot of the headquarters for the UFO investigation programs, and it's allegedly where the Roswell crash remains went. Now, Project Grudge, that was the program after Project Sign, and it's widely believed that that was just a way of debunking, which is what Project Blue Book also did. And we can't talk about that without talking about Joseph Allen Hynek, right? The world's first government-paid ufologist. He was the scientific advisor for Project Sign and Project Blue Book. He was hired because he was the scientific guy, and he didn't actually believe in UFOs. And if you read some of his book, The Hynek UFO Report from 1977, he flat out tells you that the U.S. Air Force expected him to debunk all these UFO cases, which he was cool with because he didn't believe it either. I'm going to read to you from the book itself. Blue Book was now under direct orders to debunk, and what captain or even major would go against the recommendations of such an august body of scientists as was relayed through the Pentagon. The implication in the panel report, that's like a couple paragraphs later, .. The implication in the panel report was that UFOs were a nonsense, non-science matter to be debunked at all costs. I remember the conversations around the conference table in which it was suggested that Walt Disney or some educational cartoon producer be enlisted in this debunking process. Now, isn't that interesting? Walt Disney, huh? Propaganda, you say? No. And this is why we study symbolism in film and TV, because you can't necessarily trust what's going on. We're getting messages. People are trying to be magicians to create their own reality of what's going on in the world around us. And here you could see Project Blue Book was interested and probably did employ some help from Disney, like they did for World War II propaganda. Now, if you keep reading the book, you find out that J. Allen Hynek later changes his tune. He says, as time went on and reports accumulated, so that my database was far more extensive than it had been in the Project Sign days, I came to realize that inherent in the better UFO reports, there was much more than fooled the eye or deluded the fool. There was a phenomenon consisting of new empirical observations that demanded far more serious attention than Blue Book was giving it. It was useless to remonstrate with the staff of Blue Book. It would have been a clear-cut case of fighting City Hall. And that's kind of what people know about Hynek now, is that he was the guy who, came out and said, I don't know, maybe there is something there. And I interviewed Dr. Diana Pasulka about her second book, Encounters, where she continues in her journey that she started in the first book I interviewed her from, American Cosmic. And she reveals a lot of interesting ideas about her experience with this Invisible College of Ufologists. And that term, Invisible College, was actually repurposed by J. Allen Hynek, you know, referring to these people that are studying the phenomenon in secret. Now, J. Allen Hynek was very close with Jacques Vallée, and both of them practice Rosicrucianism, another one of these occult esoteric sciences of sorts, right? I'm going to read you from Diana Pasulka's Encounters book because it details one of Hynek's interests that will tie us back into Twin Peaks where we can resume this episode, okay? Here we go. I'm talking about this guy named French. French also said that Hynek had underlined a specific quote by Steiner about how the practice of esotericism would prepare one for recognizing angelic presences. French said that there were Rosicrucian texts that had been very important to Hynek toward the end of his life. One of these texts is referenced in Forbidden Science, Volume 4, by poet Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, and had been edited by Hynek. This reference to Longfellow's monk was clearly a nod to this tradition of... Oh, sorry, I guess I was supposed to read... These are my notes from her book. I think he reads from the poem or something. Doesn't matter. It continues on. It says, this reference to Longfellow's monk was clearly a nod to this tradition of angelic visitation and perhaps what Hynek had hoped to encounter through his spiritual preparations. The etheric or cosmic entities are now imparting a language that will bridge science and spirituality, French said of Hynek's beliefs. Hynek and Rudolf Steiner believed in, and Hynek probably believed he had in his possession, materials that were mental and physical, spiritual and material. Hynek thought that some UFOs were benevolent space beings that helped us. They were potentially future humans returning to us now through this advanced technology. Do you catch all that? I mean, can you believe it? And we could unpack this for hours, but I think one theory is that AI is us from the future, giving us the Enochian language that Aleister Crowley and Jack Parsons used that came from John Dee when they talked to the angels. It's about opening up and facilitating communication with entities from another dimension, which, let's get back to Twin Peaks, that's what it's all about. All right. Whew. Meanwhile, in Twin Peaks, old Ernie Niles, he's reluctant to set up this drug buy. Because you remember Cooper and Denise, they want him to set up this drug buy with Jean Renault so they can arrest Jean Renault, right? Meanwhile, Dick and Andy, they decide they're going to go to the orphanage to try to retrieve Little Nicky's records to figure out what happened to this kid's parents. Bobby and Shelley, they're fighting because Shelley's been relegated to a caretaker for Leo, who's now, he's in a vegetative state still. And Bobby thinks he's Ben's new hotshot. And all this is just beneath him now. We also get to hear a little bit of Invitation to Love playing in the background. Remember that soap from season one? Shelley's still watching it. She's a hopeless romantic. Bobby tells Shelley, look, you need to stay here and take care of Leo because you don't have anything better to do. And she gives him a little of the old, what did the five fingers say to the face? Slap across the face. James calls Big Ed. Because, James is out there, messing around with this rich lady. He calls Big Ed from the bar and says, I need you to pull all the money out of my account and send it over to this bar so I can get it. Big Ed's like, bro, you got 12 bucks. And James is like, yeah, go ahead and send it. James, come on, buddy. He tells Evelyn that when Evelyn's the female he's messing around with, that when Laura died, he lost his life too. And it belonged to Laura in a way still. And that's one of the reasons he left Twin Peaks. Because the other one is that Maddie, he just says another girl died. And he felt like he had to get away from that whole town. And we kind of know that, but he's, you know, getting closer with Evelyn here. Meanwhile, Truman, he's all over Josie. He wants her to move into his place because he's horny. Audrey goes to visit Ben in his office, you know, because Ben's still in Confederacy Civil War mode here. You can, and there's an error in the scene. You can see a blue microphone, a boom mic in the scene. But Audrey tells Ben that they're going to save the business, but he doesn't seem interested, right? He's off in another world. So she calls up Jerry. She's like, Jerry, come on, man. Ben's in Confederate mode. We got to save this business. Meanwhile, Norma and Big Ed hook up because Norma is fully now over Hank. She knows he's a liar and a cheater. So she's going over to Big Ed. You know, it's the romance we all want. Then Truman, he deputizes Cooper so he can go along on this drug deal set up at the Dead Dog farmhouse. Because they're trying to still get Ernie and Denise to deal drugs with Renault, right? But now Denise is Dennis again for the sting operation. Meanwhile, Dick and Andy, they go to the orphanage. They look up little Nicky's records to see what happened to his parents. Because they think he's the devil and that little Nicky killed his parents. And in this scene, you can see a large pine cone. And the pine cone, we all know, is symbolic of the pineal gland, the third eye. Opening up the third eye. That's what, you know, maybe's going on here. I don't know. Donna, she's trying to get a hold of James. She can't quit him. So she checks in with Ed. He gives her the drop. Meanwhile, then Hank catches Big Ed messing around with Norma and starts to beat him up. But Nadine comes home and Nadine, you know, she don't play. She whoops up on Hank because she's tough. She's strong now. Remember, she's throwing people. Catherine shows up to Ben Horn's office. He's, you know, doing his Confederate thing. And she shows up to profess her love for him again. He's going to fall for this again. Can't believe it. James, he finally fixes up the car. Evelyn starts making out with him. She's like, oh, you need to stay. Okay. Back to the drug deal. The drug deal goes wrong. Because Ernie, he's wearing a wire and he starts sweating. And the recorder starts smoking and John Renault catches this. So he takes Dennis and Ernie hostage. But then Cooper, he offers to trade himself for them, right? Now we got a good old-fashioned standoff because John Renault wants Cooper ultimately. So Cooper's like, okay, buddy, you got me. Let them go. All right, James and Evelyn, they're getting it on. And he goes, night-night. Evelyn sneaks out, and she starts kissing on her brother. What? Yep. Cue up the Invitation to Love music. She's making out with her brother. So back to Dead Dog Farm. Reinforcements show up to the standoff. And I'm going to play a clip for you because this is the other major revelation of the episode. Jean Renault is talking to Cooper and his John's accomplice, the Royal Mountie from Canada, and Jean, and it's interesting because Cooper's like, why is my death important to you? And listen to what Jean Renault says, and he talks about how Twin Peaks was this great place till you showed up, and now it's a nightmare. And we have a little bit of talk about dreams and nightmares and so on. Take a listen.
Sharpshooters. Let's deal it. Let's run.
Will they let us run, Agent Cooper?
No.
So you think they will deal?
No.
What do you suggest we do?
Surrender.
Okay. Are you crazy?
No. But first we must decide to give up quietly or to kill him.
Then we both die.
I know.
Is my death so important to you?
My two brothers die. I hold you responsible.
Why?
What? Before you came here, Twin Peak was a simple place. My brothers dealt up to the teenagers and the truck drivers. One night Jacob welcomed the businessmen and the tourists. Quiet people live a quiet life. Then, a pretty girl died. A new arrived, and everything changed. My brother Bernardo shot and left to die in the woods. Grieving father's mother, my remaining brother with the pillow. Kidnapping. Dead. Suddenly, the quiet people, they're quiet no more. Suddenly, the simple dream become the nightmare. So, if you die, maybe you will be the last to die. Maybe you brought the nightmare with you. And maybe the nightmare will die with you.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about. But I do know we've got a damn problem here.
Cooper says, "Is my death so important to you?" And Jean Renault, who I believe is the voice of the Black Lodge, I believe he's sort of possessed by spirits of the Black Lodge, evil forces. They want Cooper gone because he's the force of light. He's the force of love. And the Black Lodge is the force of fear. Is this part of the manifestation of the battle between good and evil that's happening in Twin Peaks? Jean Renault even says it. He says, when the girl died, everything changed. Laura Palmer's death was a catalyst to something larger. And Jean Renault says the dream becomes a nightmare and the nightmare can end if Cooper dies. But of course, Cooper's the good guy, right? So this is Jean Renault speaking from the perspective of the Black Lodge. And it's obviously a major, major revelation to what's going on. Confirming these ideas we've been thinking about is that, man, there's something larger at play here with Laura Palmer. And you saw it in the pilot episode when Laura died. It's like everybody knew it. Everybody was upset. Everybody knew it. Nobody said it out loud. Everybody knew she died because there was something very important about her spirit. So meanwhile, Denise comes to the door. She's got dinner and a little skirt on. And Jean Renault, he's entranced by her beauty. And she exposes that she's got a gun in her stockings to Cooper. Cooper grabs it and he takes Jean down and, of course, good guys win. Meanwhile, Shelley, she's at home where Bobby wants her. And the lights and the power, they're dimming. What's going on here? Well, what's going on is it seems that Leo is conscious. And the question is, why does the power fluctuate with Leo's resurgence? Well, obviously, it's for effect from the show. But could it be a sign of the strange powers of electricity that we see oftentimes throughout the Twin Peaks storyline? About the electricity, spirits channeling through it, meaning maybe Leo is now powered by some other spirit from the Black Lodge or the White Lodge. We don't know. But he's back. He's back in action. Then finally, back at the sheriff's department, the power is, of course, out. And Cooper finds a dead body pointing to a chessboard. It is Wyndham Earl's next move. So we're gonna get more into Wyndham Earl's character here in the next few episodes. And of course the chessboard, we all know that's illuminate confirmed. You got the black and white tessellating squares symbolizing the polarities of, you know, good and evil, light and dark, whatever you want to believe. And there's there's a lot going on. So your homework, season 2, episode 14, Double Play. We're coming back. We're going to talk a little bit more about the checkerboard. And we're going to start digging deeper into this idea that, man, Lord Palmer's death, that kickstarted something serious. All right, folks. Thanks for your support. Thanks for listening to the show. I hope you enjoyed it. Till next time, stay woke.